Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to our first ever podcast for Team and Team Automotive. It's Team Talk, something we talked about a little bit at the end of December, wanting to start in 2025. And here we are. I'm Victor Howell. We've got lots to talk about, and we're looking forward to doing Team Talk throughout 2025 and beyond. We're not only going to talk automotive, obviously, with Team. We'll talk about a lot of other things. And the man who really had the idea behind us, as you would imagine, is my first guest, and he's our owner, our general manager, Preston Peterson. Preston, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Vic. Thanks good. For having me up here.
Absolutely. Look, this is going to be a lot of fun, something we don't do a lot here. Do a little podcast and talk about some business and have a good time. So when you first came up with the idea, you and I were talking in your office probably, what, late October, November, and then we were going to finalize it in December. The idea behind wanting to do a Team podcast, what was behind the thought?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a big fan of podcasts. I think they're more intimate, more personal. It seems more real, you know, when you hear a professional like Joe Rogan interviewing his guest. If you're watching the news these days, it seems like most of the stories are kind of prefabricated. And when you have an extra hour, 30 minutes, whatever it is, to really sit down and listen to some subject matter experts on a podcast, it's a little bit more relaxed. It gives them a chance to kind of explain their position. And I feel like you can learn a lot more in a podcast with a real fact-based interviewer than you can by reading a magazine or listening to the 10 o'clock news. That's yeah. just my personal opinion. So I thought it'd be a cool way for us to dig a little deeper with who our team members are, get to know people a little bit better, talk about what's going on in the industry a little bit, but really more just to kind of reach out and recognize a lot of the many people who have made our organization what it is today.
Yeah, and that's one of the neat things when you look at Team, that now that we've expanded to four stores, I know even at Acadiana, you know, Terrell's over there, spent a lot of time in Baton Rouge at Toyota. Now he's over at Honda at Acadiana. Leonard's over there. But there are so many stories to tell with four stores, with all stores having a service department. You've got a collision center down the road. Each store has used and new. There are a lot of people there. A lot of people have been with you a long time. And that just means there's a lot of good stories to tell.
Yeah. You know, I think this year, Team Honda was purchased in December of 1988. So, you know, we're getting close to 40 years. And there's a few people, I think five specifically, that have been with us since day one. And, you know, from previous engagements and award ceremonies, Christmas parties, mm-hmm. we always try to recognize the founding fathers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because they're the ones that laid the culture that we still try to abide by today. And there's a lot of others that have come and gone. But, you know, I look at a lot of the younger team members that we have right now, and they're the building blocks for the future. And it's important to try to recognize those folks now. I'm hoping that as we progress through these interviews, we can try to identify a few of those folks
who've sure.
been with us for a while, who have decided to make, you know, Team in the automotive industry their career for many years moving forward.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this first one, don't worry, you might be on the list. We might be coming, yeah. we'll be coming for
be
you.
Careful.
We'll be coming for you to come talk a little bit. For those who might not know you as well, and we are going to talk some business and we'll talk some themes and everything in a second. But for those who don't know, obviously, you grew up in Shreveport. You went to TCU. I got a question for you because I know every year you do your heliski trip and you get dropped off on the top of. I tell everybody, this dude gets dropped off at the top of a mountain and the guy says, see at the bottom, you figure it out. But I know you've done that for years. You used to do it with your dad and friends. But you were also big in the outdoors, I believe, in Colorado. I believe you were doing some stuff.
Yep.
When you were graduating TCU in Fort Worth, you know, 20 years ago, 22, whatever it was, if they told you then that you were going to be overseeing four auto dealerships in this industry and being a leader in this community, would you have thought that would have been your job?
Not specifically. You know, truth be told, my dad, he's been kind of a wild car guy for forever. And I tell folks, you know, when I was growing up as a youngster, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, he was a professional race car driver, you know, like the kind that hit the road and was gone for several months. So I've always been around cars, fast cars, racetracks. So I've always loved cars. His dad, my grandfather, was a partner in a couple dealerships back in the 70s and 80s. So it was always a conversation that was going on in our family. You know, I spent some time at some of those dealerships when I was a younger kid, but specifically coming out of TCU, thinking that I was going to be living in Baton Rouge, trying to grow an automotive group that was privately owned. That was not anywhere near the forefront. To your point earlier, I have been a very passionate outdoors guy my entire life. And when I was at TCU, I actually got a minor in outdoor leadership and education through the University of Utah.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so when I was a sophomore, I committed to a program called NOLS, National Outdoor Leadership School. And I did a semester course with them in the Yukon and Northwest Territories. And all those credits transferred back to TCU through the University of Utah. So that was kind of, you know, and both of them were in my blood when I was when I was young.
Yeah. What was that like when you, because at some point I want to say I heard you telling me or somebody was talking about doing a lot of stuff on trails, going through hikes, leading groups. What was that like for people who've never had a chance to? I mean, I like to ski. I'm not going to get dropped off by a helicopter, you know, like you did. And I've been fortunate to go to the mountains a couple of times and went to a dude ranch when I was young with my family. But to be on the trails and do that, what was that lifestyle like? That'd be hard to turn away.
Yeah, it's different for sure. I mean, the National Outdoor Leadership School program I did was actually 2 months in the Yukon and Northwest Territories. And if you've ever looked on a map, they're in the middle of nowhere. And when I went out there, I remember I flew through Vancouver as a 20-year-old kid, you know, leaving Shreveport, flying up, spent the night in Vancouver, got on a plane and flew up to a town called Whitehorse. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Whitehorse. It's like a famous old gold mining town. And the kind of claim to fame there is there's just as many bars, if not more, than there are people. And in the summertime, the sun never goes down, really. And in the wintertime, the sun never
comes up.
Yeah, it's one of those places. And so we were, we met at this place called the Klondike. And it was an old kind of paddle wheel boat out on the side of the Yukon River. It was 12 other folks that I'd never met or known in my life and 2 instructors. And we literally laid out all of our maps and went to the store and bought all of our rations for 2 months for 14 people. So that's kind of a unique experience to plan for, you know, 60 days completely in the middle of nowhere. And we got picked up 2 days later by a guy in a 4-wheel drive van and a guy in a 4-wheel drive dually. And there wasn't enough room in the van for everybody. So I said, well, I'll just ride with these 2 local cats in the dually. And we drove for 12 hours out of Whitehorse to a point where the road had washed out by a river that had, you know, come over its banks and blown out the bridge. We couldn't go any further.
Wow.
And I remember getting out of the van and chatting with these local cats, and there's literally grizzly bear tracks like everywhere. And the guy looks at me and he's like, man, what kind of guns you bring? And I was like, I don't have a gun. And he's like, well, here, take mine. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, you don't come out here without a gun. And I said, well, they don't want us bringing any guns. We've got mace. And he's like, trust me, if you get close to a bear, the last thing you want to do is spray mace in his face. You're just going to piss him off out here. So that was kind of the start of the trip. And every day was an adventure, and I kept a journal that I still go back and read it from time to time. It's like a probably 80-page journal of all the different encounters we had, but I loved it. You know, to me, it was kind of walking back in time. You'd come across these old trapper villages where we found a logbook one time in this old trapper village. It was a leather-bound logbook that dated back to the 1800s, and there was only like 60 signatures in the entire book. But you could tell that the original settlers and the original trappers all lived there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just thought it was, I love being outside. I love seeing the world. I love getting deep in nature and getting off the beaten path. And so when I graduated from TCU, I had this degree with the National Outdoor Leadership School. And one of my co-classmates, so to speak, who was on the trip, she had applied for a job with a company called Moon Dance Adventures. And they were a kind of an upstart outdoor adventure company. And she's like, I think you'd be great for it. And so the guy who owned the company, Hayes Hitchens, we still keep in touch. I saw him a couple months ago in Nashville, took my whole family out there to see how the company had grown. But I was one of the original hires for Moon Dance Adventures. And we started running trips for Hayes in 1998, in the summer of 98. And I became a trip director for him in Colorado when I was living in Crested Butte for a few years. And I basically developed trips for Moondance kind of all around Colorado. And in the wintertime, I would do the development work. In the summertime, I would lead the trips. And I would kind of do all the route planning and all the logistical work. And so then he asked me to come on a more full-time basis and lead trips in Costa Rica and up in Washington State. And he was trying to get me to do this international work with him. And I was like, man, you're asking me to really take a lifetime commitment. Right, and yeah. I just don't know if that's what I want to do full-time forever. But long story short, I became, you know, somewhat of a professional, a young professional in the industry. And, you know, a lot of the principles that you learn in the outdoors apply to everyday life. And so I try to always balance the two.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting to hear that, because you would think that some people might hear, I'm going to be in the mountains. Now I'm going to go to Costa Rica. That's a tough gig to give up.
Yep.
But you're right. If you're looking long term, is that something you want to do? Obviously, you were very good at it, but quite appealing. You have three kids. Are they as outdoorsy as kids as you were? I know you go hunting with your son.
Yep.
And I know y'all go on ski trips, but do you see your outdoorsmanship in your two girls and your son? Do they like it as much as you did?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, they love being outside. They love doing all the cool, you know, outdoor activities. I'd say my son is a addicted deer hunter right now, as addictive as you can get. I killed 12 deer this year. I'm like, man, you gotta relax. Like, that's enough. So, yeah, I mean, I love introducing friends, family, my kids to kind of the next level. You know, it's always fun to get out there and try new things, but it's even more fun to really advance and, you know, take those next steps.
Yeah. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Hey, so let's circle back to Baton Rouge and Team. It's hard to believe that, as you mentioned, Team Honda in 88, because I was part of the campaign of the 20 years. I was helping do that one. Now we're getting ready to do 40 years.
Yep.
It's amazing how time has flown. But the development of what you see now that your dad helped build and Mr. Ken, who was around when I first came on, rest his soul, but to watch it develop from Toyota and Honda, both of those stores physically moving to new locations, then the acquisition of this dealership, Mazda, where we're recording right now, and then to build to Acadiana. Just what you've seen over the vision over the last 10, 15 years of development before we start looking ahead.
Yep.
In terms of your pleasure, the road that got us to where we are right now,
yep,
as an organization, just what your thoughts are since you've been obviously neck deep in all of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you just look back, kind of the big milestones, Katrina took place in 2005. And obviously that kind of changed the dynamics of New Orleans and Baton Rouge. And then Ken Philibert, you know, our old president leader, he retired in 2007, at the end of 2007. And you and I did that funny walkthrough commemorative video him.
That's right.
That was a lot of fun. And he officially, I think his last days were like April of 2008. But since then, you know, I was just kind of, I don't like sitting still. And wanted to take our organization to a higher level at some point in time. You know, right after I took over full time in 2008, we had the massive financial crisis, right? And the markets were in free for all, credit markets froze up. And then right after that was the Toyota sticky pedal recall, the runaway Toyotas, the runaway Lexus. You can debate whether or not that was ever a real thing or not, but it was a major impact on our business. And, you know, I had a lot on my plate in a short period of time, and I was just trying to survive and get my arms wrapped around all the different pieces that make our business turn. But we kind of started to stable out, got some wind behind our sails. And, you know, what I learned is that we've got a great foundation. You know, we have awesome people all over the place. And, you know, I'm a big believer that you can only grow with a team. You know, you got to have great people. You can't do any of this stuff by yourself. And I felt like we were at a point where it was time to kind of take the next step. And so I started looking at some different OEMs that were growing their dealer body. One of them was Volkswagen. And if you remember, they wanted to add a point in Baton Rouge.
Absolutely.
And there were a number of applicants. We were one of those applicants. We went to Dallas, did interviews, did proposals, did pitches. And lo and behold, we were awarded a point for VW. We bought property right next door to Team Toyota. We were going to build it right to that Breck Park. And what happens then? Well, the diesel emission scandal in Germany. And VW, they had to pump the brakes big time on all of their business. They shut down all their expansion. And so we did a whole lot of work that didn't materialize, but it was a great dry run for me. You know, had a chance to kind of go through that whole process. So then I started putting my nose in there with Honda, like, hey, do you guys have any plans for any new dealerships? And well, accurately, we do. You know, we got a couple here and a couple there. What are you interested in? I said, well, you know, closer to home, but I lived in Texas for a long time, got some friends in Texas that are in the car business. And so they had a plan to open one up in Weatherford, Texas. And if you can imagine, you know, Weatherford is just on the west side of Fort Worth, one of the fastest growing markets in the country. Lots of people were interested in this, and I didn't think we had a chance. But I was like, let's try, you know. So what happens? We get all the way to the final round of three. I couldn't believe it. There was like 75 or 80 different applicants, and we make it to the final three. And they do these final interviews. We go back and forth to the Dallas office a few times. Long story short, we get a phone call from the zone manager. He says, look, I hate to tell you this, but we had to give it to somebody else. I said, well, damn, man, that's pretty, you know, heartbreaking. He goes, well, look, there's other plans down the road. You know, we're going to have some other stores. I know you're going to be a good fit for it. And I was pretty depressed, put a lot of effort into it. And then, you know, the Acadiana's announcement comes out and I was like, this got to be us, sure. You know? And so we dive back in and put forth a ton of effort to be awarded that store. And, you know, got the phone call a few months later. Hey, great news. You're the guy. I said, man, that's awesome. Well, ironically, it was literally like a couple weeks after I had that phone call. I'm talking to Todd Branch one day, and Todd says, man, I don't know what's going on, but I've interviewed like four different Diamond Mazda people like today. And, I don't know if Barry's, who the previous owner was, Barry Andre's closing the store or not, but they're telling me that he's closing up shop. And I'm like, man, there's no way. That's not how this goes down. So not wanting to miss an opportunity, I was like, man, just call him. We weren't real close friends, but we were acquaintances. And I was actually on my way to my son's golf tournament on like a Tuesday afternoon. And I said, hey, Barry, Preston, how you doing, man? I said, look, you know, I know we don't keep up all that often, but I got to ask you. I said, a couple of your employees have come over interviewing, saying that you're thinking about closing the store up. And is that true? And he's like, man, it's true. And he said, I've been doing this for so many years. You know, I'm running out of gas. I'm ready to just close up shop. And I was like, well, I could understand that, but would you be interested in possibly selling it instead of just closing?
Yeah.
And he paused for a second and he was like, well, I think I'd be interested in doing that. And I was like, well, I mean, do you have a number in mind? And he was like, nah, not really. I said, well, look, how about I just come over there tomorrow morning and we talk? And Todd used to work here at Diamond. So I called Todd back. I said, hey, man, meet me over there tomorrow morning at 8:30. We're going to have a chat. And, you know, long story short, we were able to put a handshake deal together in about 30 minutes. And, he kind of stayed open for an extra month until we could get, you know, the legal work done.
Yep.
And so those two kind of came together in a unorganic way.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of how it happened.
That's amazing because I knew the story. I think that the story with Todd is amazing. And it speaks to your point of having good employees.
Yep.
To be able to know you're like the third or fourth interview from the same place on the same day, something's going on.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. To be able to do that and then come to you and say, hey, something's going on. We should talk about it. I didn't realize that the Acadiana call came first. I thought Mazda was there. I remember Volkswagen because I helped put together that 10-minute video for the presentation that you and your dad, you know, went off to do. And I remember the disappointment after. I remember already researching VW and trying to learn about it. But then when that big international scandal hit or their problems, I'm like, oh, we're not going to touch that.
Yep.
But I was under the impression that Mazda came first. So Acadiana actually came first, the call.
Yeah,
Acadiana was first. And then this deal dropped right after.
Yeah, I remember calling a good buddy of mine who had been telling him we were working hard on putting some new stores together. And I said, man, you're not going to believe this. It was like 4 years of work and two of them basically are going to come together at the exact same time.
Right.
So we're going to get busy.
Right. And of course, since we've had all of this and you were talking about the financial crisis and everything else, I remember several times coming to your office and telling you, man, you need to just, you need like a legit vacation because you had, not to bring up the memories, you had the flood, you had the economic crisis, you had the flood, you had COVID, we've had parts issues, we've had chip issues, yep. we've had transportation issues. It always seems like something has tried to throw a massive speed bump in front of the industry, in front of you, and as an organization, but to the organization's credit, we've always been able to drive over it without damage.
Yeah, good people, man. People that are tough, people with backbone, people with desire. That's what gets you through the tough times. You know, I mean, of all those you just mentioned, the flood is by far the biggest challenge that I know I personally have ever faced, but the organization's ever faced, because it was number one, scary. It was a massive crisis for the entire town, especially where we were located. I think we had about 300 employees at that time, and like 65 of the 300 had some significant impact. You know, so you're sitting there concerned about the survivability of your own business, mm-hmm. but then you've got 65 other team members who are, you know, they lost their house and they're wondering where their next paycheck is going to come right. from and how am I going to get my kids back in school. So It was pretty crippling to that whole, you know, eastern side of Baton Rouge, Denham, Livingston, Central, Zachary, for a few years. But, you know, you put your bootstraps on and you get after it and try to make quick, good decisions and,
yep.
you know, you get through it.
Yep. And despite it all, 2024, I know overall was a good year, and I'm knocking on my head right now, but knock on wood for 2025. I know you wanted to do somewhat of a theme as we look ahead now and project forward.
Yep.
And I know you've come up with a few ideas and processes you want to go through, but you've come up with We Are the Product. Explain the thought behind that for team overall and what you want to see moving forward into 25.
Yeah. So if you try to look at it from the customer's eyes, right, not just ours, but we as a dealership, as team, represent three great brands, three great products. You know, Honda has been there forever. Toyota been there forever. Mazda's a fantastic product. But what is the customer experience? You know, they already love the car. You know, that's the brand that they're committed to. They've done a lot of online shopping ahead of time. Where you really separate yourself is by the experience that you deliver. You know, whether that's coming in for service, a wholesale parts customer, or somebody who's buying a team product for the first time ever. You know, how are you different from the guy down the street? Because there are guys down the street or a little bit further down the street. And looking at the experience as the product more so than just the car. You know, did I deliver Victor, hey, he had a good experience, or did I deliver Victor, wow, that was amazing. Like, these are good people. You know, this is where I want to do business. I trust them. You know, I want to build a relationship with these guys. I feel like I can pick them up my cell phone and call them if I'm stuck on the side of the road. So the product being the experience that we deliver whenever there's engagement on the service drive or taking delivery of your newer used car.
Yeah. And I know, like you said, the secret sauce is the people that you bring in, and you've been able to bring in some amazing people, and it's rewarded when you see things like President's Awards. I mean, in my position, I should know how many for Honda, but it's 20, 21. I mean, it's a ridiculous amount
yeah.
that leads a region for recognizing customer service. And then there's JD Power, and Mazda's now got it. And Acadiana, yeah. you know, has had it, and Toyota has had a nice run of President's Award on its own right, you know, yeah. on the Toyota side. And you just think of the people that have been there, and it's amazing when you drive around and see all the team labels. Look, as you know, I do college basketball. I'll be up in Ruston doing a game for Tech, and I'll come across a minivan or a RAV4, and I'll see a team,
yep.
you know, logo on, and they're 4 hours away.
Right.
But it's fun to see that. Whenever I see that, I always want to get their attention at a stoplight and say, hey, were you from Baton Rouge? Like, are you a student up here, or did you go down and get it? Or, you know, by the way, I work with team. How do you like your car?
Yeah.
But that has been one of the things that when you hear from people that come by and why they keep coming back is because of, to your point, the people that deliver the experience you want them to deliver to make them feel like I'm comfortable there. Comfort level.
My absolute favorite situation is when I go get my hair cut and the girl that cuts my hair starts asking me how Kathy and Terwin and Shane are doing. You know, she's been doing business. How are they doing? I got to call Terwin. My mother-in-law, she's been a long-term Honda owner. Patrick Sterling was her service advisor at Honda. She calls me one day. She's like, what happened to Patrick? Patrick's at Mazda now. What's going on? I met this nice young man, Dustin. He was so sweet. You know, but when you see your friends and your family build the relationships with our employees, and you don't have to introduce them to someone. Yeah. You know, they don't have to call you to get the deal, so to speak. That's when you know that things are working the way they're supposed to.
And you wonder how that's affecting over to Acadiana, because for those who don't know, we had a very large customer base across the Atchafalaya.
Yeah.
We just didn't have a position. So now that we've got a point over there, you hope that it bleeds over there as well, where they don't feel like, hey, I loved going to Baton Rouge, but now I'm getting the same service 10 minutes away
100%.
Instead of 50 minutes away.
100%.
Right? Carry it over there, which is great for that store. So moving forward into 25, look, for those who don't know, you're on a lot of advertising councils for all these manufacturers. So you're involved deeply beyond just our stores. What are you seeing as projections, or are you hearing? Is there any underlying theme for the dealerships moving forward? Well, in the industry, really, for the auto industry.
Yeah. I mean, if you just look at what COVID did to the world, and then you break it down on what it did to all the various industries and what it's done to our industry, is most of the manufacturers, you know, they struggled for years to really ramp up production in their plants. And, you know, fortunately for us, there's been a pretty quick selling rate of Toyotas and Hondas mm-hmm. and Mazdas. They have only been able to build so many cars based on the limited availability of chips and various parts that they need to ramp up production. And they really can't build many more than they're building right now. What's different with Mazda is they've added a new plant. They've got this partnership with Toyota that's been taking place for, it's probably about 5 or 6 years now. And so they've got a new plant that's allowing them to build more cars than they were building pre-COVID. But with Toyota, they're selling everything that they can build right now. They would have to build another plant to significantly increase their production. And I don't see that happening. So I think what you're going to see is the SAR, you know, the annual selling rate of new vehicles, will probably stay pretty consistent. Our brands, our inventory levels for each OEM, Honda, Toyota, and Mazda, Honda and Toyota will stay lean. Toyota will stay very lean because it's got a little bit faster turn rate. And, you know, Mazda's got the most on-ground new car inventory, so there really is a big opportunity for this brand to continue to grow. They had the best year. Mazda had the best year it's ever had in history. In 2024, they've got the highest market share that they've ever had mm-hmm. in history. So they've really got a lot going their way right now. You know, one of the big questions I'm sure we can discuss a little bit more is, you know, what's going to happen in the EV world?
Right.
You know, you go to a cocktail party, you go to a birthday party, or you go to a corporate meeting and everybody, man, what about these EVs? What's the deal with the EVs? And, you know, my personal opinion is we got a little ahead of our skis, you know, with the EVs, all these government incentives that have been in place for the last 4 years. They were trying to force a market too quickly, you know. It's kind of like Exxon's an energy company. You know, if solar is a better option than oil, Exxon's going to be one of the first people to develop solar panels because they're one of the biggest energy companies in the world. And if you look at Toyota, they are the biggest automotive company in the world, and they want to have a product that fits all wants and needs. And if there's more customers in Europe or in California or wherever that want to have, you know, more of a hybrid or an EV environment, then they're going to find a way to build that car, and it's going to happen organically. But I think what happened in the last 4 years is you just had ridiculous government incentives trying to force OEMs into converting their fleets at a much faster take rate than what consumers want. And so in reality, you've got, I don't know how many millions of EVs, but millions of EVs that have been built in the last 4 years that really aren't great quality products mm-hmm. that aren't going to be worth much in the next couple of years. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned getting over your skis. I remember California tried to tell everybody by what, 2030, 2040 something, they wanted everybody to have EVs. And then a year later, they slammed the brakes on it because they realized they don't have the grid to support what they're trying to do. So they pulled back on that. So never mind. Forget what we just said earlier. We're going to take that law back,
yeah,
you know, and move it away. But, you know, you talk about with the EVs, seems like hybrid's making a nice comeback. I mean, all the Camrys now being hybrid. There are a lot of brands that are going exclusively hybrid. Even Mazda is starting to tie in, you know, some of the hybrids of a lot of their different brands and styles.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it is you have to look beyond the fuel pump, and you have to look beyond the charging station, or look beyond the 220 plug at your house where you're charging your EV. and realize where is all that power coming from? You know, all that electricity is coming from either a natural gas plant or a nuclear plant. You know, that power is being generated through another means. So I think the most consumers are pretty smart, you know, and they find that they love being a little bit more environmentally conscious. The hybrid makes perfect sense. It's kind of the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. I've got the infrastructure for traditional fuel tanks all over the world. If I'm going on a trip with my family, I don't have to be stressed out about, you know, range anxiety from a 100% EV. And I personally think that the years that we're in, you know, right now and the next 3 to 5 are going to be just great hybrid development years.
I agree. I love the new Sienna. We just can't get them in. And I have a large family, you know, but I mean, that Sienna's great. As soon as they come in, they're gone.
Yeah.
They're sold. But that hybrid Sienna's fantastic.
600 plus mile range on the car.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's great. You know what? Back to Mazda for something real quick, because I can speak about this firsthand. You sent me to a marketing thing out in California 4 or 5 years ago. I guess it was maybe five or six now. I can't believe it because it was before COVID. But I remember at that meeting, and I remember coming back telling you, Mazda has this idea they want to go all luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, sitting there, they're talking about this like it's a nonstop flight. This has two layovers and a plane change. You just because you want to be it, you can't be it. Well, here we are now. They got this beautiful 90. The CX-90 is beautiful. The 70. The one thing, Preston, and I know you don't have this kind of clout. I wish you did. I wish they'd make something that's attractive to a bigger family.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like a van. I feel like I'm test example number one. I have been fortunate enough to drive a 90 for a little while, and I can get my girls. I have four girls. I can get them to squeeze into the back seat. But if they all have backpacks, I have no room.
Yep.
I wish they would. I feel like Mazda has cornered itself into, if you're a family of four or less, we've got a vehicle for you, and it's fantastic.
Yep.
But if you're five or more, you got to go look at Toyota and Honda for the van or the Sequoia or something bigger, because we just don't offer it. I wish they would expand. I wish they could do something like that.
It's a great point. And they had the MPV for years, right? Remember the old Mazda MPV van?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And with Chrysler and Dodge shutting down the Town and Country, you know, there's really only so many van options that are out there. That is a great idea. I'll pass that one up the line.
Please do. I'd love to know. I'd love to know that it started here on our team podcast, our Team Talk podcast.
Right.
When you mentioned relationship with Mazda and Toyota, and I don't know how much you'll know about this, but some people might want to know, the big announcements at the end of 24 about Honda and Nissan. Is that going to, and if that's too deep, we don't have to get into it, but
no.
I've had people ask me, hey, don't you work for Honda store? I'm like, yeah, Team Honda and Acadiana. Well, I heard there's a relationship with Nissan. Are you all going to start selling Nissans? Are you going to change your name? I have no idea. For anybody who might not know, is that going to affect us at the tier three level at us, or is that something that's boardroom and people that we don't ever meet?
Great question. This is 100% speculation, but we had three different Honda executives that were actually at Team Honda yesterday in Baton Rouge, and I asked that same question. I said, man, what's the deal? I'm sure there's a bunch of NDAs that are out there right now, and we can't really talk about it publicly anymore. But is this thing going to happen? And they said, you know, what we are hearing is that it probably will happen, which is a surprise to me. And if you understand what's happened with Jeep, Dodge, Ram trucks, you know, they've kind of been merged together, but are operating under one large umbrella called Stellantis. And there is chatter that Honda will stay separate, Nissan will stay separate, but there's going to be a new parent company that will oversee both of them. And they'll share R&D research. They'll try to find efficiencies under that new corporate structure. But I also have heard that the Japanese government has kind of said, hey, we need to find a way for Nissan not to fail. The Japanese, for most of us know, they're very prideful people.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to see one of their major long-term manufacturers get to this critical stage and fail would be very humbling. So they don't want to see that happen. And I don't know if they're going to offer some government subsidy money that's coming into play, but I know they have asked Honda, like, hey, we need to work together. We need to figure this out. Toyota kind of has strategic partnerships with Subaru and Mazda already. So they've kind of got their three. And I think this is a chance for Honda to kind of work, you know, to have an aligned partner. But will it hurt us? I can't imagine Honda doing anything that would hurt us. I can only imagine it would help us. There's been some chatter like, hey, Nissan's got trucks, like real trucks. They've got the Frontier and they had the Titan. is that a platform that Honda might have in the future? And, you know, I don't know, but people are talking about it. So there's definitely going to be some positives if it does materialize that will come from it. And the talk is this will be developed over 2025 and the new parent company will become live and on the Japanese exchange in 2026.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty interesting.
Well, I know you could probably send an email to everybody, but we'll have a seat here at Team Talk. So when you hear, let's come back and talk about it.
Yeah, for sure.
We can spread the word. We talked about the team you've put together over the years and the way it's built. But if there's one thing you'd want to recommend moving forward, and this is for everybody, I know you can only be so many places at one time, and I know you do a great job. You always stop in service and finance and sales. You always make your way around. But this is a platform where you can talk to everybody at once. So if there's something you have a goal for the team as an organization moving forward for customer service to improve the team experience another level, do you have something in mind for that that you'd want to share or that you maybe have a goal for?
Well, you know, you hit on a couple of different topics. One is, you know, we're a large organization and, you know, trying to visit with people and build relationships. And that's one thing that I always feel guilty about. Like, there's so many great people across our organization. We collectively, myself, never get a chance to say thank you enough to everybody. And, you know, when I sit down and do have those conversations with different individuals, there's just great people everywhere with great stories and people are going out of their way to do great things for our customers every day. The number one thing that I want to continue to harp on is to just build relationships with our customers, build relationships with each other, you know, trust. Every good relationship, trust is the core foundation, you know, and when our customers can trust us to do the right thing, to help them when they're in a pinch, it's just going to lead to more loyalty long term. They're going to continue to buy their cars from us. They're going to, you know, come into the service department, not asking questions. Hey, Victor, take care of me. You know, that kind of stuff. That's my goal, is to have relationships that continue to be cultivated between our customers and our employees.
We want to make sure everybody knows they're involved, because years ago, shoot, Preston, 15, 18 years ago, I'm not sure when we did it, we were having fun with the marketing scheme and coming up with a slogan. It's now on our license plates. We put it on ads. It's join the team.
Yep.
And it's a perfect fit, right? Because we're a team. You think about join our team, whether you're trying out for football, volleyball, baseball, you want to be a part of the team. And we want you to be part of our automotive team. We had fun doing it. We opened it up. I believe the detail department at Toyota received the benefits of the join the team. And we catered a nice lunch for them. Are you wanting to open that up again, or are you open to suggestions if somebody says, hey, I got something new? What are you thinking?
No, that's been on the agenda. You know, you have to evolve, right? Toyota, my all-time favorite slogan was, you know, the guy jumping on the beach and, oh, what a feeling, you know?
And
I thought that was, and I wish they'd go back to it. But we've watched Toyota kind of go through these different phases. They had one, Let's Go Places. I was like, that's kind of lame, you know, but they did it for 5 or 6 years. Join the team has been great. You know, together, everyone achieves more. That's one of our core foundations. Mm-hmm. It's inviting. It's welcoming. It's got an athletic, competitive kind of, you know, drive to it. You and I got very involved with the Baton Rouge Soccer Association, Jerry Stovall with the Sports Foundation. But I thought it'd be a good time to maybe just kind of reevaluate. Are we still happy with join the team? Do we want to progress a little bit? Is there a way to kind of tweak that in a manner where it's a little bit more mainstream, so to speak? So, yeah, I was thinking we could put together kind of an in-house survey, send it out to all employees sometime in the next, you know, couple of weeks, and give everybody an opportunity to put their ideas on paper and see if we can come up with something a little bit different.
Well, and look, if join the team stays, great. We've got it on a lot of things. If somebody does have something new, look, you can send it to Preston. If you want to email me, I'm Victor H at, and then fill in the blank, team-Toyota, Team Honda, Team Mazda. Email me, but we'll put it together.
Yeah.
So we can sit and look at it. By the way, for those who don't know, since you're talking about marketing, let me just get this in real quick before we sign off here. You mentioned the Baton Rouge Soccer Association. We've been a proud partner with them for over 15 years.
Yep.
For those who don't know, we do all the recreational uniforms for that entire league, which is made up of thousands of kids, boys and girls. And I know most of you listening, you've probably seen it at the grocery store. You've seen it at Walmart, you know, on game weekends. And we've had vehicles out there. Our signage is out there. We are also sponsors of the Ascension Flight Club, which is Gonzales's Ascension Parish version of Baton Rouge. They have a couple of thousand, not several thousand, but they have a couple thousand. Our logo is on there. And it made me think of it, because I wanted to tell you this, that last night I was shooting 90 minutes of video and photos at the team Sportsplex, which is ours on Perkins, because we're doing a new marketing campaign to get that more exposure for use.
Yep.
It's used for volleyball, it's used for basketball, but they want dances there. They want yoga classes. They want backgammon competitions when there's 400 tables of everybody just sitting there playing chess, playing backgammon, because it's we got the kind of space, right? So I'm fortunate enough to sit on that board. And one of the things we're talking about is how do we use this building? So if you haven't been by, it's right there on Perkins at Kenilworth, but it's the team Sportsplex. It actually lists all the other properties there, the bike, the velodrome and the bike and the park, the extreme sports park. But our team logo is there if you haven't seen it. We have a beautiful new 3D logo in the lobby. But I was actually there last night. They had probably 700 girls at volleyball practice, and they told me, hey, it's going to be crowded if you want to come. So I went and flew the drone inside, and we took a lot of pictures, and we're going to start using that for marketing to say, hey, you need a place to come? Come here. You know, we've got the space.
So we're 10 years with the Sportsplex?
We are 10 years. I think we're closer to about 12.
12?
Yeah, okay. When we first put the shovel in the ground with the team Sportsplex. But I just wanted to share that for people who might not know, or if they're listening over in Acadiana and they haven't been over here, how involved we are with, when you talk about the community and the importance. But we've had that Baton Rouge. We were the first ones to approach them. And they had asked us about competition, but we realized, and really credit to you, talking about when the kids come up, you have to be a certain level to make club, but you can be any level to play recreation.
Right.
And so we got in on that level, and our team logos are all over the place.
Yeah.
And then Ascension came knocking and said, hey, we saw what you're doing there. Are you interested? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially with our Honda and what we've done down in that pair, you know, down in that area. So we got on with them. So we basically own the recreationals for the two biggest areas, you know, down here with the soccer.
Yeah. Club. And if you remember 15, 16 years ago, when we were talking about this, one of our goals was to build relationships with young families.
Yep.
You know, that's if you build a relationship with a customer when they're about to have their first baby, you know, maybe you go from the Accord to an SUV to the van. Yep. Same thing with Toyota. Dad's got a truck. And it's really been one of our core focuses almost forever, you know, is to be tied to one, supporting athletics. It's great to have a team environment. It fits our demo perfectly.
Absolutely.
And the team Sportsplex, that was our old buddy Brock Cantro, long-term customer, long-term friend, long-term goofball. but, you know, that was his idea, him and Jim Bernhard. And if you remember, Bernhard didn't want to put Shaw's name on the building, but he wanted to support it because he thought it was a great opportunity.
Right.
And Brock came to us and said, hey, you know, to me, it fits perfectly with your theme with the soccer association. This is basketball. We need a basketball facility. Volleyball's growing like, you know, wildfire in Baton Rouge. And by the way, it's going to be right in the middle of town, and it's going to be a brand new building, and it's going to be in the busiest Breck Park that, you know, Baton Rouge has to offer right now. So I think it's one of the coolest things we've been able to put together probably ever. And if we can keep our name on it for another 20 years, it's just going to be that much better.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if anything else has been built, but at the time, and I still think to this day, the team Sportsplex is the state's largest volleyball complex and the second largest basketball, only to the Ilario Center. Now, the Pontchartrain Center has opened since then, and that might have overtaken it. But when we opened it as the team Sportsplex, we were number one in the state for volleyball and number two in terms of space for basketball. So last night when I was there, they had six courts going, two on each side with big nets separating all three courts. Turn them horizontal. You had two courts next to each other, and there must have been 700 girls.
Wow.
Easily, from 7 to 9. And that doesn't include the girls that went from 5 to 7 and left.
Yeah.
You know, so we're proud to say the size of that and the involvement is there.
Yeah. A lot of team plates in the parking lot.
Yeah, no, for sure. So if everybody wants to go by and see, just so you know that we're involved with that too. Well, look, I know this has gone probably a little longer than what you wanted, but this has been fun. It's been a great start. One thing you and I kind of tossed around when we first did this, it's one thing for you to tell somebody, hey, go do it, or for me to keep going around and begging, hey, we want to do this, you want to do this. So we thought if we had a guest for our team talk, that maybe our guest could be one to nominate the next guest.
Yeah.
So obviously this is our first team talk, and you're the man behind it, and you run the show, and it's been a pleasure having you. So I'm going to let you nominate if you want to. I'm happy to go ask, but if you have a name or a suggestion, maybe if you want to throw out two to give them the option in case people get a little nervous, why don't you nominate the next guest on team talk?
Yeah, I would say I have several people, you know, hundreds of people.
Not to leave anybody out. I get it. No, we'll get to them.
I would like to nominate for this. But, you know, it's you sit down in front of a microphone. It can be a little uncomfortable for some. So you think about, you know, who's got a big personality, who's had a lot of who's had a significant impact on team for a long period of time. And I've narrowed that down to a few people, but one guy who stands out, and I can tell you, I have had more customers call me about this one person saying how great he has been for them. And I've had more dealers, which is really even more impressive, and other dealer managers call me and saying how great of a guy he is and how much they've appreciated working with him. And that's Shane Bersaget. Shane has been kind of the backbone of the new car department team for a long time, very long time. I think he's 27-ish years. And Shane's a singer. I'm not going to give it all away. But
we'll talk music. I promise. We'll talk music with Shane.
Yeah, sure. Y'all can get some hits going in here. But no, Shane has built more relationships with our customers than probably just about anybody out there. And he's a guy who customers call me and say, hey, by the way, I just bought another car from Shane. He was great. You know, they don't call me anymore. They just go straight to Shane. So, you know, he's got a good story to tell. He's done a ton for our organization, a ton for Team Honda, you know, the number one new car dealer now in the state for I can't remember how many years now. Yeah, it's
no doubt.
It's a long time. And
that's my problem. I use it for advertising, but it's been so long, I don't have a count.
Yeah.
It keeps carrying over.
Yeah, you get used to it, which we shouldn't. But no, I thought it'd be great for him to carry the baton on the next team talk.
Well, I will share this with him, but I'll share this with you since you nominated Shane. Back when you were, and I say you because I wasn't here yet, Baton Rouge Honda.
Yep.
And you were on Florida.
Right.
I was a graduate of LSU, and I was working at CBS. And I bought 3 Accords over the span of about 11 years. And I bought all of them from Shane.
No kidding.
And Baton Rouge Honda, yeah.
That's cool.
In fact, I can still remember there was one where there was we had a hailstorm that came through. And I was with my dad on the back lot because there were dots on cars if it had hail damage.
Right.
And somebody had put a red dot on a car that really didn't have as much. And I saw it and I was like, wow, this one looks pretty good considering I can't find the hail damage.
Yeah.
Shane had to come out and tell me that that was a mistake. But he took care of me in another way. And everything worked out fine. But my first 3 Honda, my first cars that I bought were all Honda Accords, and they were from Baton Rouge Honda.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple customers that stand out. One is a guy named Billy Aguilard. I think he's like the number one most volume purchased vehicles from team. He's like 32 or 31 cars.
Wow, you'd have him on.
Yeah, right. And he just, man, I just call Shane. My brother-in-law, I think he's on his like 9th Honda. And he said, I just text Shane now and tell him to get it all ready for me. And I just pull up and I move my stuff from one car to the next.
Nice.
So, no, I think he'll be a great
all
idea.
All right, Shane Bersaget over at Team Honda Baton Rouge. You are on the clock. You'll be hearing from me. We look forward to having you. Hey, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad to see this idea come to fruition. We'll have a good time. And you know you're welcome anytime. You got something you want to share with the group? Come on over. We'll have some good talks.
Cool. Appreciate it. Thank you, everybody.
Preston Peterson with us here on our first edition of Team Talk. Shane Bersaget is on the clock. We hope you'll join us next time when we get to talk more team and more family stuff here on Team Talk. For Preston Peterson, I'm Victor Howell. Hey, everybody, have a great day. Go out there and have fun representing team. We'll talk again soon.